All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, we are now shifting our focus to the energy sectors. We are chatting with Dan Steffens, president of the Energy Prospectus Group. We're going to cover the move in natural gas up to $3. Oil still stuck in a range in a couple stocks, and unsurprisingly in the natural gas sector that Dan likes at these current prices and thinks that there is some upside here. So, Dan, let's start off with natural gas. Boy, oh boy, it was really stuck kind of in the doldrums there for a while as it just couldn't seem to even get above $2. However, we have seen quite the rise through May and now even into June as we're back above $3. This has been a strong move. Again, over a 50% move just in around a month and a half. Dan, what's your outlook for natural gas? Is this just the start of a much longer sustainable move higher?
Yeah, well, at first when I saw this, I mean, natural gas prices increased more than 50% since the end of April. And when I saw that continuation just day after day in May, and then here we are, we're over $3 at the beginning of June already. And I'm thinking, oh, is this getting ahead of itself? This is the short run for cover. People getting too excited. But the weather forecast is the near term in the U.S. It's supposed to be a hotter than normal start to the summer. We got our air conditioners running full blast, that's for sure. They're already warning in Texas. I think there's 12 or 13 states that are warning their people that they're maxed out on electric power generation. So they could be having short-term blackouts, brownouts, or whatever you want to call it, but having to restrict. But then the big driver is really that there's three large LNG export facilities that are on target, that are on pace to come online before the end of the year. They're going to add over 6 BCF, 6 billion cubic feet per day of additional export capacity. So we're going to go from, 14? Yeah, at the end of 2023, our export capacity was 14.5 BCF per day. And by the end of this year, we're supposed to be at 18.6. But then by the end of the first quarter of 2025, we'll be at 20.6. So going up more than 6.1 BCF per day over the next 9 months. And that will definitely, that's a big enough move. That's over 6% of the current U.S. gas production will be going to LNG export facilities. Now, we have a lot of gas. We're blessed with tremendous natural gas reserves in the United States. But the Permian Basin, even Appalachia, and now it seems that the Haynesville is also going to have pipeline capacity issues of being able to get their gas to market. So we need our politicians to get on board, which I'm not holding my breath that's going to happen.
Well, Dan, to that point, everybody makes the case that the U.S. has a lot of nat gas, and it does, but the capacity issue, the ability to get it to the pipelines, is really the choke point. So with these LNG terminals coming online, and we're also seeing a couple come online in Canada, how does that change the dynamics for natural gas on the global stage? Because right now it's very regional, but if we start exporting a lot more, and if Canada starts exporting a lot more to Europe, where it's a lot higher, or Asia, where it's a lot higher, does that balance the pricing out and lift the pricing here domestically, but lower it internationally? How do you see that playing out?
Well, I think when you look at the whole world, we're trying to electrify everything. You know, you got the EVs in Europe are still selling pretty good, I think. Over in Asia, they're still selling. So you're going to need more and more electric power generation. And then, of course, you got the AI movement that's going to have a massive demand for electricity coming online. So the global demand for natural gas and for electricity and a lot of it to be produced by natural gas fired power plants is out there. So it's going to be an infrastructure issue is what's going to happen. So then what will happen in the price, if there is delivery issues, then the LNG exporters will get into bidding wars for supply. They're all down here. Most of them are down here along the Gulf Coast. And then they're going to be building all these gas-fired power plants in the Northeast for the AI deals, and they need the gas supply too. So you're going to get just bidding wars between the utilities and the LNG exporters for that gas. So I'm telling you that looking next year, if we have a hot summer this year, we have all these LNG export facilities come online in the next 9 months. And then if we have a normal winter for a change, or anything close to a normal winter, I think you got a chance to see $5, $6, $7 gas next year. And that can happen. I mean, like we were talking about before we start recording this, was that you pull up a 5-year chart, even in the last 5 years, we've had natural gas spiked over $9 an MCF twice during that time period. So it can happen, and it happens kind of when you least expect it sometime. Some of the biggest price spikes in natural gas have occurred in the summer months.
Dan, you even mentioned politics in all of this. And do you think politics does get in the way when these LNG facilities are up and running? If it does cause more of a domestic price spike in terms of natural gas, because, well, individuals won't be happy about that and politicians want to get elected, could politics get in the way of extreme price spikes?
I think politics gets in the way of all progress. You know, you can't build pipelines overnight. You can't, you know, build these terminals overnight. And plus, they're extremely expensive. So, you know, you got to do it. But you can't transport natural gas by truck or by ship. Well, ship now that they could do LNG. But it's not as easily transportable as oil is. So you do have to have pipelines taking it to the end users. And anyway, but if they need it to run their business and the people are wanting to buy it. But the gas prices today in Europe and Asia are like $10 an MCF. And actually, natural gas on the global market trades more on energy content. So it does typically trade in the 1/6 to 1/8 the price of oil. So if you got $80 oil, and let's say it's 1/8 of that, so that's why you're up there to the higher price at $10. Is normally the price where it should be. But we don't have that because we have a surplus in North America. But if we, with this increasing access to the global market price, will have a bigger and bigger impact on U.S. gas prices.
Well, Dan, just translating this over into the gassers, into the companies or oil companies that have a nice exposure to natural gas and natural gas liquid, you've made the point that you really like them to have the nice mix of not just the dry gas, but the liquids. Are there any names that stand out to you, or are some of these companies going to start hedging when these higher prices show up? How are you looking at the gassers?
Well, the strip now on gas is the other way. It's higher out when you go. So they could be locking in now. In fact, I interviewed a CEO of a small Canadian company yesterday, and he said they were hedging some of their gas at $3.50 or something up in Canada. And he was real, you know, excited to get that higher price than what they had last year. And some of them should do that. And they did. Yeah. So what you need to understand about any company you invest in, upstream company, is the production mix. So most of them produce a combination of oil, crude oil, and natural gas liquids, or NGL, and then dry gas, which is the gas that like comes into your home to heat your home with. And then you need to look at their hedging programs, because most of the ones that do a lot of gas, they do have quite a bit of their gas hedged. So if you're looking for the ones that can get the most bang, if you're really bullish on natural gas, you think it's going to go to $5 next year, average price or something, then go look at the ones that don't have any of their gas hedged. And a big one that I know of is EOG. EOG doesn't hardly have any of their gas hedged because they don't have to. And they do sell quite a bit of gas into the international market because they have gas supply coming out of Trinidad. So that's one to look at. One we'll talk about later on in the show is Ovintiv, which used to be called Encana. And it's a large cap with a lot of gas production, and they would really benefit from higher gas prices, that's for sure.
So, Dan, before we get into more of these stocks, as you mentioned, we'll talk about a couple of them. What about oil? Oil still broadly stuck in its range. OPEC Plus recently had comments that pushed the price down temporarily, that they might lift some production limits. But does anyone even follow these limits anyway? So what's your outlook for oil still, again, stuck in this range?
Well, oil in April was at 87, so it's gone the opposite way of gas. So it was 87 in the first week or so of April, and then it dropped all the way to 73 after this OPEC announcement on June the 2nd. And that dip, that big dip, which has already bounced back $5, I'm looking at the chart now, and it's almost back to 79. So it bounced. That was a gross overreaction by the paper traders. It's 30 times more oil trades on the derivatives market or the NYMEX strip than there is physical oil. And a lot of these hedge funds have a lot of long positions or short positions or whatever, whichever they think it's going to go. And there was really just a mention by OPEC that they might, not that they will, but that they might start lowering or raising some of the quotas. allowing more oil to be produced. But it wasn't even that much. But the fact that they mentioned they might start backing off on their quota system. But then they go, and then when the price dropped just a couple days later, OPEC comes out with a statement basically saying, we just said we might, not that we were, and we will only do it if the demand is there. They're not going to do anything that if they believe is going to really bring down the price of oil. And they're happy with if oil, Brent is selling for in the 80s, they're good with that. They don't want oil really to spike to 100 or 120 because they know it'll kill the golden goose. They just want a stable, a fair price, and their economies must have steady oil revenues.
Well, Dan, just to that point, do you think where prices are now, let's say in the high 70s to low 80s, is that fair price? Or is there any potential that we could see a spike to triple digit oil? Because there's been some people prognosticating on financial media that they think it could surprise people. Have the markets gone to sleep and gotten lulled into a false sense of security that we're going to stay in this range? Is there a potential for a price pop?
I think the biggest potential is if the Fed does start doing interest rate cuts, meaning that they're going to support the economy to avert any kind of a recession, I think that would do it. That'll push oil into the 80s again. But oil prices are one of the biggest reasons we have inflation. So I think this recent comeback this week is because there's more talk about the Fed maybe in September, October, raising the interest rate. That could do it. I've adjusted my price deck that I'm using to evaluate companies. I came down from $80 in the second quarter down to 78. And now I'm using 78 in the second quarter, 80 in the third quarter, and 82.50 in the fourth quarter. I still think we are looking at, if we avoid a global recession, I think we're looking at prices in the low 80s at least. And then I'm using $80 for the 2025 for oil and $3.50 in 2025. So I do think my gas price could end up being way too low for next year.
Dan, you made an interesting comment to us off mic too about the relationship between oil and gold. We talk a lot about gold on this show, the spread between the prices. Take us through some of the historic data here, please.
Well, historically, the price of oil is 1/20th. The price of gold. So if you've got gold at 2,400, so 1/20th of that would be $120 oil. So obviously we're way below that. Now we have some members in Energy Perspectives Group that they are very keen on this issue, and they believe that gold's going to come down or oil's going to go up, and all of them don't believe that gold's going to come down. So they think that will eventually pull up the price of oil. Gold is a hedge against inflation, and oil is also a hedge against inflation. So they go, but oil's it's on the global market. And right now, the global market seems to be adequately supplied. I also saw today, I think IEA actually raised their demand forecast a little bit. And that may have been because the oil price jumped on Wednesday almost a buck again. It was down a little bit this morning because of a storage report by EIA, but then it immediately bounced back.
Well, Dan, with this information in hand, as far as the basically you're expecting higher oil prices in the third and fourth quarter, maybe in the low 80s, and you're expecting natural gas prices to stay high, possibly getting into the 350 to higher zone next year. With that in mind, you mentioned a couple of companies to us that you wanted to flag as potential opportunities for investors. And one of them is really a mineral royalty company, and that's Blackstone Minerals, trading the ticker BSM. It's interesting because we talk a lot about gold and silver royalty companies, but these companies are doing the exact same thing with mineral rights. And a lot of the exposure with Blackstone is actually to natural gas and natural gas liquids. So I'd love you to unpack with this kind of dynamic in the underlying energy prices, how does a mineral royalty company like Blackstone fare?
What I like about Blackstone is they are super conservative. They basically have no interest-bearing debt. I mean, they have some bank fees because of their credit line that they finance expenses. But as far as paying actual interest expense on long-term debt, they don't have any. And it currently pays a dividend that equals $1.50 per unit per year. So the dividend yield is over 9% today. And that dividend is super secure because of their strong balance sheet. And they produce about 74% of their production is natural gas and natural gas liquids. Now today, and they've hedged a lot of it. I think 60 or 70% of their gas is hedged this year at over $3. So they have that locked in for the rest of this year and first part of next year. But then if the long-term price of gas, and they keep rolling their hedges forward. So if the price of gas starts going up, they'll be locking in that higher price with their hedging program for the second half of the year next year and 2026. So I really like it for security, and it's a great way to play. If you believe natural gas has got upside, I think it's a safe way to play it because you get that real nice dividend. And it is a master limited partnership, so it does have some tax benefits. The actual net income of the partnership is what you pay your taxes on, not your distributions. And the distributions are higher than the net income that will be allocated to you. So there's a little bit of a tax break there. I would warn people that a lot of people want to put these high dividend companies into their IRA accounts. If you do, there are some special reporting requirements, and it can be a problem if you put a lot of money into them. So just understand the tax requirements, tax reporting requirements if you do that. But so they should be held in taxable accounts, so you get the benefit of it at the lower taxable income on your tax return. But it's a good one. My fair value estimate is $17.25. I think it's traded at about $16. So there's not a lot of, I don't see a lot of upside in the share price unless they raise their dividend. And I do think they might raise their dividend next year. So there's upside too on the share price. TipRanks, which is a service that I get, their price target is $18.50. So they see a little bit more upside there than I do.
Yeah, that dividend yield already close to 10%. That's pretty solid. And if you even think they might raise that, hey, that's worth noting. Some more of a safer play, I guess, in the natural gas sector. Let's also talk Ovintiv. You have whet our appetite for that one, traded OVV. This is a large natural gas producer. It's in your Elite 8. And in your Sweet 16 growth portfolio, I believe. So fits in both of those portfolios. Take us through where they stand in terms of some of their production metrics and where you think that growth is then going to come from.
Well, the share price closed at $48.60 on June the 11th. And my breakup value today, I believe, is $71 a share. This is a large cap company with 500,000 BOE per day of production. They do produce a lot of gas. About 45%, I believe, of their production is gas. Yeah, let's see. Okay, the actual percentage for this year is 47.5% natural gas, 36.5% crude oil, and 16% NGL. So let's see, 64% of their production is tied to natural gas prices. Natural gas and NGLs are usually driven by the natural gas price, but it looks really good. They've made a lot of progress this year, paid down some debt. The balance sheet's in much, much better shape. And what I like about it, this is a company you guys would be familiar with up in Canada called Encana. It changed their name to Ovintiv, and it moved to Denver, their headquarters, because now most of its operations are in the United States. But it also has a track record of under-promising and over-delivering on its production guidance, which I like. It makes me look good. They meet or exceed my production forecast almost every quarter. And it's just a good solid company. I think it's got like 50% potential upside in the share price. And it also pays a dividend, not 9%. It pays a smaller dividend, but it pays a little dividend. And it's got a stock buyback program underway. So it's got a nice shareholder friendly distribution of their free cash flow. So I like it. It checks all the boxes, which why it's in my Elite 8.
Well, Dan, just one more on the nat gas companies in general. We've seen a nice pop, as we mentioned, almost a 50% pop in the price from 150 to 3. But it doesn't seem like a lot of the nat gas companies really responded that big. I mean, they've moved up a little bit, but they haven't made the same kind of move as the underlying commodity. Do you think that's because they've already priced in this move and they've got some hedge like that? Or do you think that the market is still not believing this move is sustainable? And do you think there's more upside in these gas companies or oil companies that have a nice nat gas component?
Yeah. And I really think the movement in the gas price is not really it's not like oil going to 100. It's not like it's just really getting back to a fair price. I mean, these companies were struggling to make money when gas was below $2. They were struggling to show net income. Well, at $3, they're profitable, but they're not grossly profitable. But now every 10 cents more of gas price you get is just 90% of that is falling right to the bottom line. And they have low operating expenses. And that's what I like about some of these companies like Antero, EQT. EQT is also in our Elite Eight. It is the second largest gas producer in the United States, second only to Chesapeake. And I like Range Resources. I really like Range Resources, and they do pay a very nice dividend. That's a good one. So just look at the production mix of each company. And then also what's good about Antero, Range, and EQT, those are all producers in Appalachia. They're the ones that are producing Marcellus Shale and Utica Shale gas. There is some pipeline issues up there, but EQT especially has got a lot of firm transportation, a lot of the pipeline capacity already tied up, guaranteed to them. And so they're going to be able to get their gas to market, and they get, because they produce such a high volume, like 5 BCF a day. I mean, they produce 5 or 6% of the total U.S. production. That's how big this is. And they're going to do really well. And if gas does go to $4, man, then it's sky's the limit for that one.
Dan, do you see any money filtering down into these smaller, either natural gas plays, if natural gas continues to move higher, if there's maybe a certain price level around there, or even into some of the smaller oil companies?
Yeah, the thing is, and we were talking about this yesterday on our webinar, that, boy, the volatility, and really when you look at the oil price, it's stabilized a bit between 75 and 85. It's trading in a range and seems to be okay there. And these companies are extremely profitable with an oil price of 75. They're very profitable. I mean, just look at the first quarter results. The first quarter results were based on oil averaged $77 a barrel in the first quarter. And I got it being higher than that for the entire rest of the year. And they all reported really good first quarter results. And the natural gas price in the first quarter was $2.10. So you can see they're going to get so much more revenue from their gas and their NGLs going forward that even if the oil price just doesn't do anything, they're going to report much higher revenues in the back half of the year. And they had weather-related issues, too. A lot of them had production down a little bit for the winter weather in the first quarter. So they're going to show some production uptick and much better realized prices going forward. So yeah, but still, some of these Canadian juniors, we've talked about InPlay, we've talked about Hemisphere. I interviewed the CEO of Journey Energy yesterday, that's a Canadian junior, and these stocks are trading for just over 2x, 3x cash flow. That's insane. I mean, several of these companies are trading below book value, which is just crazy. They're profitable. They're generating free cash flow. Hemisphere and InPlay pay really nice dividends. And I think they're both, one of them might be slightly above book value, but they're both got a lot of running room. They both look really good to me.
All right, Dan, we'll wrap it up here. Always great having you on the show. Thank you for diving into the energy sector. And it's either oil or natural gas that we're talking about, and rightfully so with the move that we've seen in natural gas. It's Nat Gas's turn. If it keeps moving higher, these stocks should start really moving, but this could be the opportunity for investors that were waiting for the price to start moving higher and then the stocks to follow. Maybe this is, as you outlined, the chance, even in some of the bigger stocks too. We always see the big stocks move first. Again, Dan is the president of the Energy Prospectus Group. That link will be shared in the show notes. Dan, thank you for joining us on this weekend show. Everyone, thanks for tuning in to the weekend show. Be sure to go back and visit our website, podcast, and YouTube channel, the KE Report, for all of our daily editorials and company updates. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.